Not quite live from Forget the Box Studios in Montreal. This is the FTB Podcast, the only podcast you're listening to right now.
And welcome to the FTB Podcast for February 2019. Specifically, it's February 23rd, a Saturday when we're recording this. I'm Jason C. McLean.
I'm Don McSweeney.
And you might be familiar with the old FTB podcast. That's in the past now. It was fun, but that's a completely different animal. This is our first episode of the new FTB podcast, episode 1.01.
It's the reboot.
The reboot, yes, yes. Our format's a little bit different. Last time we were both audio and video. Now, like a true podcast, it's just audio, except we are going to do the news roundup segment in addition live on Facebook video. Today, we're going to be speaking with our special guest, Niall Ricardo, who will be out in a little bit, and we'll be talking about the Outremont by-election, and I guess with the Burnaby South by-election by extension. We also have an interview that Hannah Besso conducted with Julia Sanchez, the NDP candidate in Outremont. That's a little bit later in the show. And we have some interesting features that we're adding. For example, a poll question. We're going to be tackling a poll question. Should Major League Baseball return to Montreal? That's your opinion. You were one of the people who voted on the poll. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. And we also have a segment called Things You Might Not Know. But first, to kick it off, let's do
News Roundup.
And let's meet our special guest. Niall Ricardo is a political operative working for Marjolaine Boutin-Sweet of the NDP. He's also a very well-studied student of Canadian politics. And welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Okay, so this is News Roundup. So we're going to start with the biggest story, I think, of the week. Bernie Sanders is running for president again.
Yeah!
Yeah! Yeah! Woo! Yes, yes. I'm very excited. I mean, I think the thing is, the fascinating thing is that he's actually the front runner. He by the money metric too. In the first like 3 hours, he raised something like $4 million.
I know, it's insane. But I mean, yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see that dynamic play out, right? I mean, he started the last campaign where, you know, there was a problem with name recognition. Is this just gonna be a fluke? Who's Bernie Sanders coming from Vermont? You know,
yeah.
And now he's the front runner.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be difficult. I mean, you know, it's difficult to be the front runner, right?
Yeah. Although what's interesting is they actually did something to make it easier for the front runner. They moved California's primary up because Basically the one who has the money advantage will have the easiest time of actually getting votes in California instead of building it. So that actually might end up helping Bernie, actually, I think, which is an interesting turn of events.
I just want to see him debate Donald Trump.
Yeah. That's the thing is Sanders could beat Trump. Whether or not Sanders can get the Democratic Party to support him,
that's the problem. Yeah.
Again.
Well, I mean, Biden, right? If Biden comes in, you know, I mean, Kamala Harris, who's got, you know, I mean, yeah, we've been joking about and there's been a lot of memes online, but I mean, still a contender, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how, because we know that there's a split, right? There's a split in the party right now between the people that want to see the Democratic Party go more left and the people that want, you know, kind of the Democratic Party that seem more electable, quote unquote, whatever that means.
Which I think makes them less electable, actually.
100%.
You know, so yeah, exactly, right? But we're going to see that split, I think, in the primary. Now, the whole question is, how do those two camps, who are they going to convalesce around?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And are they going to convalesce around somebody, or are they going to split votes? And then we're going to see a field that we didn't see because we had two candidates, right, last time.
Yeah.
Of people dropping out, endorsing other people. So it's going to be really interesting.
Well, I mean, that's honestly, if you think about it, the Republican primary last time around, that's one of the reasons why Trump was able to win. It was such a large field that a basically atypical candidate was able to win, whereas it was just Sanders versus Clinton, pretty much, after like the other people dropped out.
Now, the other reason that Trump was able to win is because the Democrats split the vote between themselves and they're fixing to do it again.
You mean in the general election? I was talking about in the primaries.
I'm talking about they didn't coalesce against either one, and then they fought, and then they said, "Well, if it's not going to be Bernie, I'm not voting at all." And then that's how you get a Trump elector, and that's what's going to happen again unless they pull their shit together.
Also, Hillary Clinton really ran a bad campaign. I think there was one state where she went to the college area where the Democrats were already popular. It was a swing state, I think Ohio, but or Pennsylvania. But she didn't go to the rural areas and try and convince some of the potential Trump voters over. So yeah, I mean, I hope the Democrats don't blow it. I really wish it was a Bernie AOC ticket because his vice president's going to be in.
Imagine. Unfortunately, he's still my heart.
Legally speaking, though, she's actually too young to run for vice president because the main job of the vice president is the ability to take over president. You have to be 35 to run for both.
How old is
yeah.
she?
She's 29.
29.
Yeah. Yeah. 29. And, but she will be. I think she will be president someday. Some yeah. point in the future.
Your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah. But
hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully, yeah. If not, she'll be the best commentator on politics this side of anywhere. But as I guess there's two big stories happening. They kind of, you can look at them sort of together because people are even analyzing them together. Jussie Smollett faked an attack while the U.S. government thwarted one. What do you think is going to be the bigger news story?
Well, everybody's still pretty upset about Jussie Smollett, and I've got to say I fully understand, and it's you have every right to be upset about it, and it's crazy and madness. It's kind of fascinating. I want to see the psych reports on this guy. But the other one is the Coast Guard.
Yeah, just for
Christopher Paul Hassan, who got arrested a couple of days ago as a what they're calling a domestic terrorist for keeping a hit list of journalists and Democrats, including AOC. And they found quite a stash of weapons.
Yeah.
So
pretty impressive stash, actually.
Pretty yeah. impressive stash.
Pretty impressive stash.
Additionally, writings yeah. of him trying to get his hands, suggesting that anthrax or a plague would be the most effective way to spark a race war. Self-proclaimed white nationalist. And I think that's what the internet needs to be talking about instead of wondering about Jussie yeah. Smollett on
and for those of you who don't know, Jussie Smollett was one of the stars of Empire, and he faked a MAGA white supremacist attack on himself. Not very well. I think he paid people in checks. I don't know if it's any
He's iron. LGBT community and a person of color, so there's a lot of yeah. a lot of reason for people yeah. to feel betrayed by the claim.
Yeah.
And that's fair. There are people and it's that a felony.
Yeah. Attacks like that really do happen, and he's using and trying to fake one for personal gain. But yeah, that's what people, what you're saying, Ann Coulter said that people should be talking about that and not about the...
Well, it was Ann Coulter who said that all hate crimes are a myth and this one is just, are a hoax and that this one is just the one that got caught. And meanwhile, Trump said it is a shame, although he has been known to call reporters enemies of the people. He calls this incident with the Coast Guard a shame and sad.
But I mean, that's kind of what's going to happen, right? I mean, in these two things is that we're going to have kind of, you know, one side, like left book or whatever you want to call it, right? Talking about one incident and then the other, you know, talking about the other incident, right? Where it enters this kind of like, both of them fit into this rhetoric, right? Where it's like, oh, everything's fake on one side. And then the other side, oh, you know, the real problem with terrorism is white nationalists, which is reality. I mean, statistically speaking, right? Without any doubt. But what I think is interesting, I mean, which is interesting or kind of sad at the same time and really dangerous, is how Trump reacted to this. And the way Trump is reacting to this is him gearing up for, and I think it segues into this whole debate about Bernie and if Bernie's going to win. Trump is preparing for a Bernie run.
Yeah.
He's preparing for it, and he's preparing for it in a way that is mobilizing his base, right? And one of the emails that he sent out was, America will never be a socialist country.
Yeah, yeah.
America will never be socialist. And the way he reacted to this whole Coast Guard thing is saying like, well, you know, I forget the exact quote there, but he said something that was interesting, like, you know, like basically white nationalists doesn't really exist, or he said something along those lines, or white nationalism yeah. is not a threat, or whatever. And he didn't condemn it, right? And that's speaking to his base directly, right? It's saying, listen, we have a polarized politics in the United States. I mean, throughout the world right now, Western world at least, but we have polarized politics in the United States. I'm going to exploit that yes. divide, right?
Yeah.
You know?
It's unfortunate. Exploitation. Also, speaking, one thing I just thought of this, on the State of the Union, somebody interviewed AOC after and asked her, oh, Trump called out socialism. Do you think that was an attack on you? And she's like, you know, our policies are actually very popular. Like the raising the tax for people making over 10 million, the 70%, that's very popular. So what he's trying to do is he's trying to use the isms, trying to bring the words out there to get people scared. Just to change gears, we have a pretty sad story in Montreal. Brody Stevens.
Not in Montreal, sorry.
He's somebody who's come to Montreal. Brody Stevens, a comic, a veteran comedian, passed away. He's been to Just for Laughs. We actually We covered him on the site, and the comedy world is really shaken up by this.
48 years old, it's an apparent suicide, and he had spoken openly about his struggles with depression, and it just reinforces to remind that some people are laughing so they don't cry, and that sometimes all the laughter in the world can't stop it, and that doesn't mean we can ignore it, and we still have to reach out even if they seem like they're laughing.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yes.
And so we also have some on the site. We're going to share some, like a number for Suicide Action Montreal.
Yeah, the post under this on the Forget the Box Facebook page has the a review of one of his shows and the number for Suicide Action. So yeah, RIP Brody. I saw this guy a lot. He was such an intense comic live. It was one of the most unexpected experiences I had at a stand-up show, and one of the most thrilling, actually. And it was amazing performer. It's really sad to see him go.
And my heart goes out to all the people who knew him personally. It's it's really so terrible when you find out that you lost somebody that you know that way. And it's when it's a community like comics who are always rallying around each other. It's I hope they're all reaching out and creating a network of support.
Yeah, yeah. Back to politics for a second. The SNC-Lavalin gate is heating up. I think the Globe and Mail, Maclean's magazine topped themselves. They had a headline after Jerry Butts resigned. It said the hole that Butts' resignation leaves in the Liberal Party, or something to that effect. And funny headlines aside, I think this might be something that could actually undo the Liberals. I mean, I don't think it's going to go away.
It's not a good look.
Yeah. And the whole thing is, it's who's going to capitalize on it. And I'm happy the NDP actually put out a video about this, because last time there was a huge Liberal scandal, we got Harper for 12 years.
And we don't want that again.
Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting, this whole scandal. I mean, in the sense that, is it going to be like the scandal de commandite, you know, sponsorship scandal? I don't know. I mean, is, you know, it's funny to see the two solitudes once again, right? In Quebec, you have, this is a huge Quebec company. You have Legault going to bat for SNC-Lavalin, you know, saying, well, you know, obviously we're going to find, you know, an agreement out of court. Because actually, if they were indicted, right? So the whole thing behind this is that if they were found in contempt and collusion, corruption, et cetera, they couldn't bid on government contracts for 10 years.
Yeah.
Right? So that's basically a death sentence to this company that basically is the biggest construction company, in terms of like government, receiving governmental money and et cetera, and big projects, you know, in Quebec, right? So
yeah.
Quebec has been going to bat, and the rest of Canada, it's kind of like, oh, well, the Liberals are at it again. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, the ties between SNC-Lavalin and, you know, the PLQ or the Liberal Party go back, you know, generations and generations. This is nothing new. Is it going to be something that is going to be the downfall of the Liberal Party? They did sacrifice Gerald Butts, which I was not expecting. I was seriously not expecting them to sacrifice, basically, you know, for all we know, the acting prime minister of this country.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the person that actually calls the shots in the PMO. But, I mean, is it going... Now we have to see the whole Wilson-Raybould factor, right?
Yeah.
Is Wilson-Raybould, she stayed in caucus? She actually went to question period and answered questions from, you know, the Conservatives and the NDP on this case in Parliament, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think the few weeks, though, before that, where Trudeau wasn't letting her speak, I think he looked really bad with that. Like, that, and he started to notice. That's why they had to sacrifice
Gerald Butts. Revenue Quebec just issued a bill to one of the head SNC-Lavalin guys for near $11 million for money that he apparently had stashed in Libya, which is part of the problem to begin with. So, and they're suggesting a seizure of his assets before he declares bankruptcy and flees the country, which he apparently has done before. So it's not going away.
Yeah, it's not going away. And one thing that's going to play a big part in all of this are the upcoming by-elections, the one in Outremont and the one in Burnaby South. FDB's Hannah Besso had a chance to speak with Julia Sanchez, NDP candidate in Outremont. Let's listen to that.
We had the chance to speak with candidate for the NDP in Outremont, Julia Sanchez, about the upcoming election.
Clearly have a passion for international development and environment. So how does the NDP, why NDP in other words, how do their values align with your understanding of climate change and your mission?
Yeah, Great question, thanks. So you're right, I did for a period of time work specifically on climate change and have integrated that very much into my overall understanding of the challenges that we face. And the attraction for me with the NDP is that the NDP is, first of all, the only, in my opinion, true opposition that we have in the Canadian Parliament. Has done that job brilliantly through the years and has really held both the Conservative and Liberal governments to account. With a Liberal government in power, I think there's opportunities, potential to do a lot, especially on the environment, given their promises and their discourse. But if there isn't a strong NDP pushing the Liberals to do more and to come through with their promises and to be more ambitious, we aren't going to live up to the great challenge that lies before us. So I share the NDP values. I believe in the NDP and the social democratic character that it brings to our country that is so important, so distinctive. I want to do my part to make sure that the NDP continues to thrive and to grow and to be strong and to push for what our country and the world needs right now, which is action on climate change as a top priority.
Mm-hmm. Recently, there was some anti-pipeline graffiti and that the NDP actually decided to leave the graffiti up. Can you talk a little bit about what happened and that decision?
Sure. So when we opened our office in January, I think it was within the first week that one morning we came to the office and there was this graffiti on the window in the front which said in English, "Stop the pipelines!" exclamation mark. So we looked at that and we had been cleaning up the windows because when we rented the office, it already had some graffiti on the window. So we had been, you know, we had some volunteers who had been cleaning it and we thought, okay, are we going to clean this one out as well? We actually put out a little poll on Facebook to get people's opinions. But as a team with our volunteers, we had a discussion. We thought, no, we're going to leave that on there because we agree with that. And this is part of, you know, the greater ambition that we need to have and that we're not seeing coming from the Liberals on this environment file. So I'm campaigning on a proposal that we need a great transition in Canada and that the first thing that we need to be doing is to stop the subsidies to the oil and gas industry and to stop new investments in infrastructure for the oil and gas industry. So that means, in very simple terms, as the person who put the graffiti on the window, we need to stop the pipelines. I think that really captures the essence of what we mean on that front. The other areas, other things that we need to do urgently are set some ambitious, adequate targets for reducing our emissions. The targets we have right now are the Harper targets. They're way too low. They're so unambitious and they need to be increased. Everybody knows that. Liberals know that. They're just not doing it. And the third thing, of course, is we need a plan for a just and equitable transition, which is a complex, holistic, profound plan to shift not only our economy and our energetic system, but the whole society towards a decarbonized country and society.
We also asked Julia if she had any messages for voters, and she had this to say.
Just a reminder, I think, of how important this by-election is for the progressive movement, progressive forces and voices in Quebec. You might recall that when Thomas Mulcair won this seat in 2007, it was really the first, of a series that have come after of wins from left-wing parties. So we've seen Projet Montréal grow and expand its coverage and power across the island. And then in the last provincial election, a real surge in the support for Quebec Solidaire. So I see this by-election, and I think all my colleagues share this, as a really critical by-election, not only for the NDP, not only for Outremont, but also for, you know, progressive forces on the island of Montreal. So, and we sense that because we have, you know, volunteers coming to help us from, you know, across the city who I think understand how important this by-election is.
From Forget the Box, this is Hannah Besso in Montreal.
Thanks, Hannah, for that report. And if you want to hear the a longer version of the interview, the full interview, it's up on forgetthebox.net. So I think Julia's right about how important this is, about how like a victory here would definitely be great for very important for the left in Quebec.
Yes,
I know. I mean, it's she has a bit of an uphill battle though.
I don't think there's anybody in the NDP right now that is like sitting back and being like, you know, oh, it's okay, you know, we can always finish in an honorable second, like, you know,
yeah,
so close to the general election, this is a really, really important, you know, by-election. I mean, the symbolic weight of Outremont, obviously, you know, historically for the NDP, first place where we actually got a foothold in Quebec and all of that, is obviously really important. This being said, you know, I've been reading all of these kind of like catastrophic articles about, you know, the NDP is going to die, doomsday is coming, you know, to Outremont, the NDP is like going to be wiped off the map completely after this by-election in Outremont. It's like, you know, guys, like, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, SNC-Lavalin wasn't even a thing, you know? Heading to the 2015 general election, you know, Thomas Mulcair and the NDP were at 40% in the first poll. And yep. Justin Trudeau was, everybody, by all standards, everybody was saying, all the pundits, well, you know, he's going to be completely toast in the debates. I actually did better than Tom, in my view, in the debates. So, I mean, anything can happen at this point. The thing that is for sure is that it's a by-election. And by-elections mean less voters turn out. Yeah. And people, unfortunately, that are affluent, that have, you know, normally more educated, more affluent sectors of, you know, the riding, are going to turn out to vote, right? Yeah. So does that mean the Liberals are actually going to get, you know, a bonus at the ballot box? Or does that mean the NDP? And actually, the cards are kind of in the NDP's hands here. In the sense that the Mile End and, let's say, the eastern part of Outremont...
And Côte des Neiges.
And tend to vote more. Côte des Neiges tends to vote less, yeah, even in general elections. So it's all about how good is the operation on the ground going to be on election day, really.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the NDP win, but my money's on the Liberals, and that's...
Well, they're really trying for this one. I mean, I think Trudeau's been to town like 5 times, maybe not. I don't know. I know he's visited, like... I mean, this was a Liberal riding for 50 years or some, or so, even longer than that, until it became an NDP riding for the last 11.
Yeah.
So I think the Liberals really want this back. Even, like, I don't... I think they've... I'm pretty sure they've given up on beating Jagmeet in Burnaby South. I think this is where... The Liberals are definitely focusing on.
Some people would say they never wanted to beat Jagmeet in Burnaby South, you know? I mean, that's the rumors going around, right? I think that it's obvious that they want to win this by-election. This being said, like, you know, we had that whole thing of, you know, Jean-François Lisée would say, you know, the unceded territories of the PQ in terms of, like, the QS ridings. The Liberals don't say it because they're politically correct. But they kind of, like, act like it, right?
Yeah.
Living in Outremont, I have rarely seen volunteers go out for the Liberals. Of course, I'm biased here because, you know, I work for the party, full disclosure, all of that. But, I mean, they are kind of treating it like that. And Rachel has refused, like, out of the three, four debates that were held, Rachel refused to go to those debates, right? Which really? Kind of shows
I didn't know that.
Kind of shows the contempt that, you know, the Liberals have for Outremont. I mean, if you lost 3 times in a row, you would expect these people to be like, okay, maybe, you know, it's a wake-up call. And I really, really hope, beyond all partisanry and stuff like that, I really, really hope that people do send a wake-up call to the Liberals come, you know, Monday.
Yeah.
And say, like, listen, guys, like, you know, you made a bunch of promises that you didn't fulfill in 2015. And beyond that, you know, this whole scandal coming out right now, you know.
Very, very like, good timing for the NDP.
Yeah, it's time for you guys to wake up. And, you know, it's not going to change the composition of the government, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's still going to be a Liberal
majority. It's a job interview for a 6-month job, pretty much, right? Like, it's...
Absolutely. It's permanent campaign from there on. I mean, anybody who wins on Monday, they're going to be in campaign mode from there on, right?
Yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah, the thing though too is I think because that interview with Julia Sanchez, she sounds fantastic, like a fantastic choice. And I think what her victory would help would be the fact that the she's not a household name.
Yeah.
Tom Mulcair was a household name before he even ran. Then he was deputy leader. Then he was leader of the party. Now voting for a major party leader, it's kind of hard for them to lose their ridings generally. But this is her first time in politics, and I think she'd be a great representative. I think she'd bring a lot to the House of Commons, just hearing her talk, like her experience working on the environment. And I think the timing of it, like the timing of the SNC-Lavalin, I think... If Jagmeet wins as he's expected, everyone's expecting that. And I even suspect that there was some talk about Jagmeet losing, And I suspected it was the Liberals actually pushing that talk in hopes that the NDP would take some resources out of places like Outremont and put them into Burnaby South out of fear that Jagmeet was going to lose.
So that's interesting. I don't know about you guys, but I've been hearing a lot about, you know, the Liberals want Jagmeet to win. Their, you know, best bet for them come next general election. The whole candidate that said, you know, those comments. And then, I mean, between us and everybody listening, obviously. but, you know, like, there's been people that have done way worse stuff than that, and they've been kept on as candidates, right?
Yeah.
So the fact to throw that candidate under the bus seemed, like, really bizarre to me. This being said, Jagmeet is, you know, I have no doubt in my mind, is going to prevail in Burnaby South. It's tradition. I mean, you know, the current mayor of Vancouver was an NDP MP, Kennedy Stewart. Now, that's his riding. You know? That's so. And I mean, it was Sven Robinson's riding back in the day. Sven Robinson is running.
Well, he's coming back now.
Peter Julian has been campaigning there. We've got Jenny Kwan. You know, there's a loads of.
You've always been a huge Sven Robinson fan, right? Yeah. Am I wrong in saying that? Yeah. I'm not wrong in saying that.
No, I'm very good friends with Sven. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he's coming back. Do you think he's gonna get his seat back?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I have no doubt that we could have 10 seats in this country, and Sven Robinson would be one of those 10 seats. And I mean, this is kind of off topic with the whole by-election stuff. I mean, but it's good what he's bringing back to the NDP. You know, it's good, and that's what Julia in Outremont is bringing too. Is that these are candidates that are saying enough is enough of trying to bring, oh, we're the second best thing to you know, we're actually Liberals that are going to keep our promises, you know? Yeah. It's no, we're talking about bold initiatives. Sven went on and said no new pipelines, no new infrastructure for oil and gas.
Yeah.
And
I feel like that.
That should be across the board.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be something that the NDP is saying. It should be something that everybody is saying. We've got 12 years to get this done. And that's literally, you know, I was going door to door in Outremont, and you know what? I'm a socialist. I 100% believe in the fact that, you know, the system gets people down. People don't go to vote because they don't have the time to get interested in politics. And that's part of what, you know, the system does. Also, we have political parties that don't represent people, right? That don't actually talk about the issues that should be talked about. Now, what really kind of I saw at the door-to-door in Outremont is people being like, okay, we got 12 years to act. So I hope that that's what's going to be brought back right now, you know, that the NDP can actually say, yeah, we're going to be the people that hold the two governments, you know, if be conservative, be liberal, because, you know, I mean, you know, we're probably going to be in a minority position next election. I think that's what's going to happen, and that, you know, the NDP could play a role there, and we're going to be the people holding, you know, their feet to the fire. And that's what Julia has been saying on the campaign trail. And I think that's a really good message.
Yeah, now is not the time for moderation. We don't have very long. And I feel that anybody who's trying to make themselves marketable to both sides makes themselves unmarketable to either side.
Who wants to vote for, like, the lesser, who wants to vote for a lesser version of something? Like, if I want the Liberals, I'll vote for Justin Trudeau, right? Like, and I think that's with the, at least the NDP base realizes that. And I think Jagmeet, I think he's poised to actually have that realization himself, especially if he wins and he wins in Outremont too. I think that might reinvigorate him to the point where he's going to really start being the hero we need, right?
Or the hero that I wanted him to be. It's been a while now.
I was not personally a Jagmeet supporter in the I supported Nikki Ashton in the leadership race, but I think that I think Jagmeet has it in him to do great stuff. Is he going to be the AOC of Canada? I don't know. Maybe. But if as long as he tries to not be Justin Trudeau, if he tries to be Jagmeet Singh and tries to be a new Democrat, and with people like Julia, people like that, if the NDP goes, I think we could be in for a surprise. Because if you think about it, like you mentioned, last election, everyone was like, oh, the NDP is going to win for sure. And lo and behold, the Liberals won. The election before that, everyone was like, oh, this is going to be like Harper or Ignatieff. It's going to be that. The Layton's done. And what happened? The orange wave. When people underestimate the NDP, that's when the NDP does really well.
When I went to go see Jagmeet Singh's platform, I found pretty well a very well-edited photo essay about his life and some of his biography that he wrote, like a little essay about what he was as a child and stuff, and I didn't actually find anything where he was saying, we need to stop pipelines, we need to do that. I just wanted concrete things for him to say, and without that, it does become just a wishy-washy. I don't want an Instagram model to run my country. That's not
what I'm looking for. He does look good in the suit, as you know.
He looks fantastic, but I need him to do something in that suit, or he could just stop.
Yeah, and I think he's going to do it. I think everyone hopes he's going to do it.
Well, Jagmeet, one of the things that I haven't liked recently is people saying, oh, well, if Tom was here, if Tom was doing this, and then Tom going on CTV and being like, well, you know, Jagmeet is not up to date on his files. Let's not forget that kind of, you know, Jagmeet was an MPP. His staff at the time was three people, or maybe two people and a half, right? Your deputy leader, but at the time, the ONDP, this was before...
Before the ONDP became the opposition.
The opposition. So he didn't have, you know, he didn't have the kind of responsibility that you have. And you come into a party that is mortally wounded after 2016 in Edmonton, where, you know, we've never seen that before, kicking out a sitting leader in Canadian politics. It would have been difficult for anybody. I do like the stances Jagmeet has took in the past months. He has on Venezuela.
Yes.
He was right on that.
And he split with some of the members of the party.
He's calling for transparency with SNC-Lavalin, and I like that.
And I think that, I mean, I don't know about you guys, I was really fired up to watch QP when they got back on Tuesday. The questions.
I watched it. I was so excited.
The questions that were coming out. And Andrew Scheer did terrible. Yeah. Terrible. It looked horrible for him. I mean, he was standing up asking Trudeau about questions. I mean, you know, it was like, okay, could we just get somebody else to get the questions for the Conservative Party? Because, you know, Andrew Scheer, like, he doesn't have the fire in him. He just doesn't. This is his moment. Yeah. You're smelling blood in the water, and you are standing there being like, oh, you know, I kind of want to be nice about this. You know, it's okay.
Meanwhile, I saw Jagmeet share a video about this whole scandal and encouraging people to think about it. And actually, that we're gonna move on. We're gonna actually go to one of our new segments now on the podcast.
Things you did not know, maybe.
If you party late on Mount Royal East, but live in the Snowden area, or quite possibly Ville Saint Laurent, and you don't like spending money on taxis, there is a magical night bus for you. The 368 goes all the way from Frontenac Metro to Côte-Vertu Metro. Basically, this bus goes up from Frontenac Metro, up to Rachel, up to Mount Royal, goes all the way along Mount Royal from Frontenac right to Park, turns up Park, goes all the way to Bernard, turns up Bernard, does a little trip by Outremont Metro, does some of the 51 bus route, heading into the Snowden area, turns up Victoria, goes up Victoria, eventually makes its way over to the Carry around de la Savanne and du Collège, and then right up to Côte-Vertu Metro. I discovered this one time when I lived on Villeneuve near Park, and I had a friend who lived on Victoria, and we were wondering how to get back to his house, and lo and behold, the magical bus arrived. That's the 368, stm.info.
Man, Jason, you should make the announcements on the Metro.
thank you for that.
Survey says.
Okay, so this is a little bit of a democracy, speaking of, in action, we have on the site. The past month and a half, actually, we've had a poll, a survey up on forgettheBox.net. It's the Should Major League Baseball Return to Montreal survey.
The correct answer is yes.
Oh, Niall, I think you might disagree on that.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Okay. Well, there's a few questions. Okay, so I'm just going to go through some of the results first. Okay, so first of all, 84% of the people who responded do, in fact, live in the Greater Montreal area. 8% don't, and another 8% say no, but they're a frequent or semi-frequent visitor. Now, the first question, and this is one that I think Don might like. Would you like to see Major League Baseball return to Montreal? 88% said yes, 6% said no, and 6% said maybe. Now, moving on to the next question. The results do get a bit because we asked a few more questions. Would you go to see games? 56% said 56% says I'd go a bunch of times. 16% said I'd get season tickets. 16% also said maybe once in a while. 10% said depends on who they were playing. And 2% said no. Okay, now moving along, the next question. Should the city of Montreal, now this is where I think the vote might change a bit, should the city of Montreal pay for some of the new stadium? 52% said sure, as long as it's not too much. 30% said yes, and 18% said no way. Is the Peel Basin, and this was recently announced that the team does want to go to the Peel Basin, is it the best choice for a new stadium? 76% said yes, 18% said there are better options, and 6%, including me, said what's wrong with the Big O? And moving along, do you think Major League Baseball will return to Montreal? 70% said yes, 14% said no, 16% said not sure. And if it does return, what should the team be called? 100% said the Montreal Expos. And by the way, that was the only choice and you had to pick it.
I agree with that.
You agree with that, yeah. If they're going to do it, they have to call it the Montreal. Because there's a lot of Expos memorabilia. Yeah. There is a history with
it. The hats
it.
Are still going around, you know, like you can't
bring up another name. Can't call it nothing like
the
that.
The Lids store says they're the fifth selling cap behind the Blue Jays, New York Yankees, Los Angeles Dodgers, and Boston Red Sox. And also that the sales of the merchandise have been going up steadily over the past few years, even though we don't have a team.
Yeah, yeah. Now
that's pretty impressive.
Is pretty impressive. Now, I'm going to say this survey was the reason why we did this survey was because the actual people who were trying to promote a team did a survey, and lo and behold, the results said everyone wants baseball back. But of course, it was the people who were trying to bring baseball back that put out that survey. So we thought we'd do one without a horse in the race. And there were 50 people responded to the survey. So that's the numbers we're talking about here. Now, you said merchandise is going strong. I think the one thing that maybe could be a good reason to bring it back is where we would be in the league. And I researched it. We'd be in the American League East because we're thinking about maybe taking over Tampa. Tampa's team, or possibly currently even sharing responsibilities with Tampa. Now, if we're in the American League East, unlike last time we were in the National League, that means we'd be in the same division as the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox and the Toronto Blue Jays as well, too, which means Montrealers don't fill up the stadium, we get people from Boston, New York, and Toronto coming to pay to see games. So that might make the team more feasible.
Yeah, it's an interesting argument, yeah.
Yeah, I think, and it also, I like any time Montreal's on the stage like that and puts us out there. I think it increases our market share of tourism in general. And additionally, I mean, I root for the Jays, and it would be pretty cool to not do that anymore.
But. I cannot.
We all root for the Jays.
We gotta root for the Jays.
And then it got that extra hype with the Maple Leaf cap, and then the Drake, and you know.
But how cool would it be then if we could go back to our good old Montreal-Toronto rivalry, and we could root for Montreal over TO? That's some good old school fun.
Well, I mean, I'm not against the fact, and I think there's a lot of people in this boat not against the fact that the Expos come back. But be like, why should the city of Montreal... I mean, you know, just talking about the whole political side about this, Valérie Plante in the election says, no, there's no way. That's Denis Coderre populism. You know, and there was crazy stories about Denis Coderre in baseball, right? There was like these stories where he basically commissioned the sports, whatever section, like Parks and Rec sports, whatever, the city of Montreal, to set up baseball fields across the city in places where... The sports department was like, yeah, there's no way that like this people is going to be feasible.
Yeah.
People in those areas don't play baseball. They don't care. And he still would go there and like get the photo ops, right? And so Valérie Plante was like, this is proof of Denis Coderre being like a horrible public manager and whatnot.
The pawn of Major League Baseball. It was the angle of the out-of-town calling the shot. I think one thing she is consistent on, though, is she did say that... She wouldn't actually rule out the Expos coming back, but she wouldn't be a pawn in Major League Baseball, and she would hold a referendum on whether or not to fund a new stadium. And she is consistent on that.
I would like to see the polling numbers behind, because I'm sure Denis and Denis maybe not, because you know Denis kind of like he was Trump-esque, Trump-esque in that sense, where he was like, okay, I love baseball, I'm gonna go 100% for it, you know. But Valérie is looking at this probably from, okay, what am I going to lose if I'm against it, right? So we are actually talking about that, is it an Anglo-Franco divide
Like, is, you know, is Valerie going to lose and Projet going to lose NDG if, you know, they're against the stadium? I don't know. But one of the things I think that a lot of people, like, are the majority of people, I would think, is how much money, public money, yeah, is going to go into.
Exactly. You know? Why shouldn't the private sector pay for it? Like, they're the ones making the money off it, right?
Yeah.
Now, I mean, if, for example, I think, I don't know, did the public sector chip in at all for the creation of the Bell Center?
That's a good question.
Good question. Because that's different, though, because that's, Montreal's a hockey town.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what, you got to say, no matter baseball, other sports, we will always be a hockey town.
But you can only be a hockey town half the year.
That's true.
That's true. I mean, it's about the development of the project, too. Is the project just going to be that? Or, you know, one of the things that I kind of, like, hesitant about the whole Bell Center and stuff is the Tour des Canadiens, right? And
yeah.
Now there's another one going up, and there was one before, and then so it becomes this huge real estate project where, yeah, we're basically putting up huge condos. And, like, we know it's all about foreign investment, placing your money. Basically, you know, it's a good bet. Condos are going up. Real estate market's doing well. So loads of those condos are not even, like, you know, they're empty, right?
Mm.
How is this project going to be developed? And that's the questions we have to answer. It's been 5 years of this saga, more or less, on and off. They're coming back. They're not coming back. Yeah, we haven't heard any details about the project. Are we going to be pushing? If we push for this and we say we want social housing,
yeah,
in that project, like, you know, that they finance, they give us to the city fund or whatever, you know, social housing, whatever, I would be totally down for that project. You know, it's how we negotiate.
Yes, very true. You know, exactly. And the Peel Basin, I think one of the key things is they'd have to move some, maybe the Pink Line, I don't know, some transit closer, because otherwise you're basically walking south from Bonaventure to get to this thing. Or you're taking a bike, which is great, but, you know, not everybody is going to be taking a bike to this thing. Like, it's an open area that they could build this stadium, and I don't think they'd have to kick out too many people. That's I think the main reason why people like this location, but it's kind of far from transit. So it's, yeah, it's, I guess, how it works out. We're going to have another survey question on the site. Check back this week on forgettheBox.net, probably around Tuesday or Wednesday. There should be another survey question. Fill that out. And next week, or next month, you're going to hear about the results of that survey, and we're going to dissect that. But right now, we're going to dissect some of the things that questions people have sent us.
Dear FTB, I have a question. Can you help me? So our first question is from Brandon. Dear FTB, I'm wondering if it's possible to have too many Facebook friends. I generally accept everyone, as I don't really share too much personal stuff, but now I'm rethinking that strategy.
Ooh, interesting. Well, Brandon, I kind of have the same strategy you've had up till now. I generally accept anyone. It takes me a lot to unfriend people. They have to really personally piss me off to unfriend them. I don't know if you guys are the same. Do you think there's a definite number of Facebook friends you should have, or...?
I checked with my daughter. She's 20. She was firm on 800. I believe if you're accepting all the requests, you're friends with a lot of Russian bots now, and probably some cam girls.
Well, actually, you, question.
If you're accepting all the requests, yeah.
When I said all, I don't mean, I realize this now, I don't mean all. I have to have at least met the person in public, or they have to be somebody who is connected to a bunch of other friends and I've seen their name pop up. But, like, they don't have to actually be, like, a real friend to add them. But, no, I get cam girls all the time adding me, and I don't accept them.
So they just have to be networked in.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the people that add me on Facebook, especially when they're not expecting all of the, like, communistic propaganda that's going to be, like, you know, invading their feed. So, like, a lot of people probably delete me. So, it, like, kind of, my list keeps up by itself, right?
I'm going to add you later.
So, like...
She might like the communist propaganda.
But it doesn't take me much to unfriend a person, too, especially if I'm adding people who are just kind of networked in. I just have to see a couple of your opinions a couple of times that stress me out, and I'm just done with you.
I'd like to have
I would agree with that, too.
That's true, although what I will generally do, if somebody, like, some of these opinions just kind of get on my nerves, is I won't unfriend them.
Yeah.
I'll just unfollow them.
Yeah.
And I just won't see their stuff in my feed all the time. But at the same point, too...
But if you don't want to see them, why are you keeping them?
Because I want them to see me.
Well, no, there's that. But there's also, I think it's an interesting sociological experiment to have people that you don't agree with Especially when there was like, I was listening to Canada Land, like their last thing about the yellow vests and how like, basically these little groups online take so much media attention now. Like they just have to create a Facebook group. People say a bunch of random crap, right? And then people are just like all over the media, you know, it's this big movement, right? And I see kind of this, over the years, I've been thinking about it recently, this kind of like, you know, you can see the polarization within society happening on Facebook through your friends, like, and the feed. And especially within white males that are like over 45.
Yeah.
You know, there's like this kind of like getting more and more radical about stuff.
Yeah.
To me, Facebook is a bit of a safe personal space in that, like, the people on there tend to be exactly as you were saying, people I've met at some point somewhere or networked in. So I have less of a tolerance because now I feel like you're in my living room sharing your opinion and I don't care. If I want to find a different opinion, I'll hit Twitter.
Yeah. I like to keep a couple of, like, I'm like you, I like to keep a couple of like hard right people on my feed. Just a couple, just to know what the extreme argument on the other side is. So
I've got in debates with them actually.
Now. Yeah.
Oh, for the love of
God. So,
they got in debates when I wrote articles. Yeah.
When someone just has is obsessive about something that I really don't care about or disagree with, but they're not like, it's not interesting. I'll mute them. I'll unfollow them, but I'll keep them on.
But it's like a completely different worldview in the sense that like you would never expect people, like it's impossible for me to comprehend how logically that works out. How can somebody actually put like these things together and piece them into like a kind of logically sounding argument? So I find that really interesting.
Yeah. So I guess the answer for Brandon is, don't accept all the requests. Do so discerningly.
Yeah.
And then the rest is people who are networked in. How much patience you have.
Yeah, and then people who are networked in. And if you only, and just keep in mind, unfollow is always, I think, a better option than unfriend. That's for me personally. But again, Brandon.
It gets awkward when you unfollow, when you unfriend somebody.
Yeah, now I have one more question before we run out of time. It's from Cheryl. Ooh. Cheryl asks, my boyfriend thinks pineapple goes on pizza. Should I leave him or just try to change him?
Ooh, Cheryl.
There's no changing there.
Oh, okay. We're going to, Cheryl. Now, I think we have different advice on this one. I think the advice is split in the room here. First of all, I think that you should just, I think he's, you know, you should maybe try to change him, but I don't think that's going to work. But
or he should try to change you.
Maybe.
Because
you see,
put a little fruit on your pizza. It's not going to hurt anybody.
I like pineapple and I like pizza. I just don't think pineapple should go on pizza. I could have a slice of pizza and then have a pineapple. That would be fine.
Somewhere there's somebody going, I like chocolate. I like peanut butter, but I don't like them together. Are they right or wrong?
They are wrong because they go great together. Pineapple on pizza. It's just like it's. Pizza is not a fruit. I mean, I know it has tomatoes, but pizza is not sweet. Pizza.
Exactly. Sweet and savory. Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. Sweet and savory for the win.
Like,
this, so you got outvoted on this.
Would you put a lollipop on a hamburger?
Apparently.
No, but I put maple syrup on a hot sausage.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Absolutely. Apparently a Canadian, this is a Canadian invention or whatever.
Hawaiian pizza.
Right? Hawaiian pizza is a Canadian invention. Like, this is as Canadian as a beaver. Like, seriously, you know, we really, this is like a national treasure.
How else are we going to get our fruits? I wouldn't put beaver on my pizza
either. Yeah, how else are we going to get our fruits, you know? Like,
it's a long winter. We need to get them in somewhere.
Now, I agree with Canadian traditions. Speaking about traditions or Quebec traditions, something like poutine. Now, could you imagine, you can put so much stuff in poutine. Hot dog on poutine, bacon on poutine. Could you put pineapple in poutine?
I'll try it.
I've never tried it.
Would you try it?
I would be looking forward to it.
Yeah, I would definitely try that.
Kind of a Hawaiian poutine. Maybe you're on to something. Maybe this is the next big thing.
We got to call Banquise, see if they already have one.
Yeah, actually, they probably do. Or if not, Banquise is great, by the way. Yeah, I don't know. It's for me, like, I've had Hawaiian pizza, and I've been at the point where the only time I've actually eaten Hawaiian pizza was where I was with somebody, and somebody's like, I'm buying pizza. Great.
And you were hungry.
And I was hungry, and the Hawaiian pizza showed up, and I'm like, you know, I didn't pay for this. I didn't choose to invest in this. But
and
you know,
didn't sit there and pick it off methodically like a crazy person, or did you?
I think something about the sweetness distracted from the sheer gluttonous grease taste that I was looking for.
It cuts the grease too. It's true.
I don't think the grease should be cut. I think pizza is not health food. Pizza is something with like grease, cheese, and
you just built a poutine.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I don't think you should put pineapple on poutine.
I think the real question is, how many people have been saved by Hawaiian pizza, you know? How many people would have, like, you know, all these different diseases because they had no vitamin C because they're getting
Hawaiian pizza? We're protecting against scurvy,
you know,
here, guys.
Hawaiian pizza is literally, like, you know, people were saying, eat an apple, whatever, doctors, whatever, you know. I'm sure some Canadian doctors somewhere have been like, no. Go get a Hawaiian pizza. You know, a Hawaiian pizza per week will save you, like...
And like our esteemed colleague Hannah was saying earlier, if you're a vegetarian, it really throws some goodies into the mix. And I would imagine if you throw some hot peppers on that bad boy,
Yeah, totally.
Hawaiian pizza also has ham on it, so...
Well, we just took the ham off and left the pineapples.
Yeah, jalapeno, whatever.
Jalapenos and pineapples, I'm down.
Yeah, exactly.
It is vegetarian pizza on its own. But on that note, I think we're not going to solve this. So Cheryl, we don't really have an answer to your question, but if you have a question... hopefully we'll agree on some of these. You can send it to dearftb@forgettheBox.net. And now,
predictions!
My prediction is a Liberal win in Outremont.
My prediction, and this one's for the team, is that Julia Sanchez is going to surprise everybody and come through Monday night.
Woo! My prediction is that, because this week we had we always had a cat in the studio. Now we also have a dog. Next week, we're going to have possibly a fish or a bird or some other type of animal.
I also predict that the People's Party is going to do better than expected in these by-elections, and that's going to become a big problem for Andrew Scheer in the next election.
I predict I got to buy some pizza and make Jason eat some pineapple on it.
I predict I will be definitely partaking in some pizza, but I will not be having the pineapple. So, I guess that wraps it up. Thanks a lot, Niall, for coming
Thank
to the podcast.
Guys.
We're back in another month. I hope you enjoyed it. This is our new format. Tell your friends, share us, or you can listen to this on iTunes, on forgetthebox.net, on the new site podcast.forgetthebox.net. Also check out daily content on forgetthebox.net, news, politics, arts, culture. We'll see you again next month. The FTB podcast is produced by the Forget the Box Media Collective in Montreal. Producer is Hannah Besso. For daily news, arts, and culture coverage, check out forgetthebox.net.